Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and the Promontory Foundation.
It's 8:08 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. This hour, I'll be talking with Summit County staff planner Sean Lewis, taking a look at a couple of the projects on Tuesday's Steinerville Basin Planning Commission agenda. Also, at about 8:30, we'll be talking with Ricky Tickman, a longtime Park City second home owner and currently the president of the New Park Hotels Homeowners Association Board, and Brian Richards, director of Mountain Town Music. We'll be talking about an open house tonight for a development application, The Preserve at New Park. It's a new development proposal to build 8 townhomes adjacent to the Sun Calendar Plaza and Amphitheater. Both of them have some concerns about that. Finally, Paul Askins will be in to review the Heber Valley Concerts in the Park series that kicked off last Wednesday. First, in some local news, Vail Resorts does not intend to withdraw its applications for the trademark of the works Park City. But the company officials do hope that after last week's discussion with the Park City Council, the community will better understand why they're doing what they're doing. The COO of Park City Mountain Resort, Bill Rock, doesn't like to hear the community think that Vail is rude and arrogant because of its trademark application for Park City. But he tries to explain the company's position of why they've applied for it and why he thinks it really is best for the entire community. Vail Resorts is following up on the trademark application that was started by the resort's previous owner, Powder Corp, to receive the trademark for the words Park City as it pertains to a ski and snowboard resort and a mountain resort. He notes, however, that Powder's application was turned down because it went well beyond the category of what they're in business for.
It was too broad and it was denied. And as a result, we entered into conversations with lots of folks, like I described earlier, and we very much narrowed the trademark application down to using the words Park City as it relates to ski area operations only. So our intent is really to protect Park City. And I would think this is something we could align around in the community. This is to protect Park City from having any other entity, any other mountain, call themselves Park City as it relates to ski area operations. So it's not intended to infringe upon others' use of the word Park City and their business names here locally.
While Park City residents are very protective of their town's name and identity, Rock says that's not how the rest of the world sees it.
The outside public, outside of the community here, have referred to Park City ski area as Park City for years and years and years since its inception. And that's really what we're trying to do, is make sure no other ski resort can call themselves Park City and represent themselves as us or as somehow related to us.
Yeah, but I mean, we went from Park City Ski Resort, Park City Ski Area, then to Park City Mountain Resort, and that was done specifically because we are a year-round mountain operation. So why not go after Park City Mountain, Park City Resort, Park City Mountain Resort, one of
sure.
those trademarks?
Yeah, so we own those trademarks already. So we have those trademarks. I think what this does is it protects Park City as a ski area, so no other ski area can do that in the country.
Vail Resorts has provided a draft memorandum of understanding to Park City Municipal for review, which they say outlines language for the city to offer legal protection to local businesses, also for the ability to Vail Resorts to discuss how to clean up those areas of confusion. The trademark, they say, will only prohibit someone from opening up a ski resort called Park City, at least in this country. And it's no different, says Vice President of Community Relations Kristen Williams, from what the local business Park City Brewer did when it trademarked the words Park City to be used specifically for beer and spirits.
That's the only thing. And that's what's so important to keep reminding everybody, that it just don't open up a ski area and call yourself Park City. So.
And I think you know, there's over 40 businesses in town already that have the words Park City in their business name. And there's actually one, Park City Brewery, who's actually trademarked the words Park City. They've trademarked the words Park City as a standalone as it relates to brewery, distillery, and I think there's one other thing, very narrow, just like we're trying to do with the ski area.
Right. The Park City Brewery is actually a good example. They have a beer that's Park City, right? So, like, for example, Breckenridge Brewery based out of Colorado, they can't start a new ale called Park City because of that trademark that Park City Brewery has. It's purely, just like us, a business protection thing. But we just, that's why, you know, we want to further enter into this MOU with the city to give the assurances that local businesses need. All your questions, you know, it puts teeth behind our statement that we're not going after any local business.
Or any future business.
Correct.
Wanting to use the words Park City.
Correct. Right.
Vail Resorts is also willing to reduce the confusion they say is only a local problem. They've changed their underwriting spots here on KPCW that used to say Park City to new spots that say Park City Mountain. The signs at the base of the resort that point to Park City will now say Park City Mountain. The rest of the world, they say, understands what and where Park City is.
Outside of this community, there is no confusion. Everyone calls the resort Park City. Everyone wants to come to Park City. And again, not just the ski resort, but because it's such a complete destination and people love it here.
Vail Resorts believes this memorandum of understanding will give local businesses the assurance that there will be no infringement on current or future businesses who want to use the words Park City in their business name. This trademark for a ski and snowboard resort, they say, is really protection, not just for their investment, but for the entire community as well.
How would the community feel if a ski area in some other state in the country opened up and called themselves Park City? This protection really protects all of us, that there is a resort in Park City solely for skiing and snowboarding and instruction that's got this trademark, and it protects that for the future for us and I think for the community.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing to note that if we were to drop the application, we're not giving back Park City to anyone, right? Like, no one owns that. And so in this way, if we dropped it, we're opening it up to the world. You know, there's been a lot of media attention. Ooh, I'm going to grab onto that and trademark it. And it would make this community's ability to fight that a lot more difficult.
That's Kristen Williams and Bill Rock with Vail Resorts. Rock says he is happy to meet with any business who is still concerned or has questions about the trademark application. He is available at 435-647-5402 or by email. That's wrock@vailresorts.com. Newstime 8:15. I'll be talking with Summit County Planner Sean Lewis right after this.
This is Irene with Chateau Recovery, proud sponsor of the Mountain Life on KPCW. For adults struggling with addiction, we offer additional therapies in meditation, music, art, canine, nutrition, and family therapy. Information at 866-808-4160 or chateaurecovery.com. Addiction is a disease. Recovery is a choice.
8:15, good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. The Snyderville Planning Commission meets tomorrow in regular session starting at 6 o'clock at the Sheldon Richens Building. On the phone to review a couple of the items, I have staff planner Sean Lewis. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
So first off, I just want to make note there is a public hearing and possible action regarding a conditional use permit request by Mountain Regional for a 16,000-square-foot water tank and 3,000-square-foot pump station. This is to be located on Silver Gates Drive near the Silver Creek Water Reclamation Plant. That's not your item, so we'll move on to the second item, a public hearing regarding a conditional use permit for a couple of accessory buildings over 2,000 square feet in Silver Creek. These are buildings, one is for a 6,400-square-foot basketball court and associated uses, the other for a riding arena of about 18,500 square feet. The buildings came to the Snyderville Planning Commission in a work session last month. So these require a conditional use because?
So in our development code in the Snyderville Basin, we allow for accessory buildings, and there's no maximum size on what somebody can build. But we do have restrictions on once you reach a certain trigger of size, you either need to get an administrative low-impact permit or a conditional use permit from the Planning Commission. Buildings over 10,000 square feet require the conditional use permit. Now, one of these buildings would only need, the basketball gym would only need a low-impact permit, but because they both came in on the same application and the riding arena requires a conditional use, we just wrap those all up into one conditional use permit.
All right. How big is a basketball court? What's regulation size?
So the court in this gym is smaller than regulation. The dimensions of a regulation court are somewhere around 94 feet wide and 100 feet or a little bit longer, 150 feet in length, I think. I'm not sure. I don't have that off the top of my head. What he's planned here is a building that is 71 feet wide and 90 feet in length. So the gym portion of it is significantly smaller than even a high school gym would be. But the owner calls it an extreme playhouse for his children.
Okay, so it's going to be more than just a basketball court.
Yeah, there in the area, there's a basketball court, there's a lounge area, there's a locker area, there's a play area. There's a fitness room for where you think of a weight room type thing. There's some office space. There's a what's labeled as an arts and crafts. There's a veranda and a porch. So lots of places to go play and work out.
And as you mentioned, the other is an 18,500 square foot writing arena. Again, just for personal use?
That's what they tell us, is that this is a writing area that they want to enclose. They have a writing area outdoor on the property right now. They want to enclose it and have some stable area and such. Again, the owners told us this is personal use, but understandably, we've heard some concerns from the neighbors that about potential for commercial use. And so one of the things we've heard those concerns, and you'll notice on the agenda, the Planning Commission cannot take action on this tomorrow night. The applicant has heard some of the concerns of the neighbors, is looking to revise the plans a little bit. We haven't seen what those finalized plans are, but we felt like it was important to still hold a public hearing tomorrow night to allow the neighbors to come out and speak and give us their concerns regarding this project, and give the applicant a chance to hear those as well, so that they can be taken into a final design. So, again, public hearing tomorrow night, but no action will be taken on this specific project.
So what are staff's concerns about the two projects?
Well, our concerns is future use. You know, does it become a commercial use? Is it are they going to have writing lessons or you know, basketball team practices out there? I mean, those are things that, you know, he says he's not going to do, but we've had issues where people have said one thing and done another in the past, in multiple instances. So we're concerned about that. We want to make sure we listen to the concerns of the neighbors and see if there are concerns or what those are, if there are any, and take those into consideration before the Planning Commission makes any decisions.
Yeah, conditional use permits though, can't they condition the approval to
sure submit? Sure. The Planning Commission has the right to mitigate any health, safety, and welfare issues or any impacts that need to be mitigated. You know, we commonly will mitigate things or condition things for noise or lighting or other impacts like dust and such. So we can condition those. We have not prepared any findings or conditions. We just want to have a chance to have a discussion with the neighborhood before we move forward with this.
All right. And you could also require that once built, it could come back for a year review?
We can. That's something that has been done in the past as a review later on. We've moved away from those in the past just because of internal issues of following up on that. But we can do that again. But we're not to that point of determining what conditions may or may not be on this one, Leslie. It's a matter of let's just have a discussion, see what the concerns are, and then let the applicant move forward with the application and take that under consideration.
All right. Also on the agenda, the Rocky Mountain Power upgraded transmission line. This is the tail end of that proposed line from the boundary of the East County Planning District to the Silver Creek substation. Basically, it's closer to Quinns Junction. This stretch of the line falls within the Planning Commission's jurisdiction. How long are we talking about?
It's about eight poles that run. As most people are probably not aware, the boundary of the Eastern Summit County Planning District actually encompasses all of the promontory development, and so it does come down a little bit closer to Quinns Junction than you may realize. And there's about eight or nine poles that stretch that are currently there. Rocky Mountain Power is proposing to upgrade those from the 46 kV to a 138 kV transmission line. And this is a bigger project that runs from Evanston, Wyoming, all the way into Silver Creek, this upgrade. So this is not just these eight poles. It's an part of a larger project. But the portion that's in the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission is limited to these eight poles. And these eight poles are all on Rocky Mountain Power property. So they own the property that the poles are on. One issue that they did have is that it does run through what we call the Silver Creek Overlay Zone. So Rocky Mountain Power did have to get approval, pardon me, from both the EPA and the Utah State Division of Environmental Quality, which they did receive, to upgrade the poles in this location.
All right. So is this line near any buildings or structures? That seems to be the concern on the Eastern Planning Commission.
Certainly. The only buildings and structures that are right close is just the ones on Atkinson Road there. The lines really aren't immediately close to ones like they are in the Hoytsville area that we've talked about before. But there are some buildings out there, but they're a good distance away.
All right. Is there a staff recommendation on this?
Staff is recommending approval. There's no residences in the area. It's an upgrade that doesn't ridgeline. It's on Rocky Mountain Power's property. So we have no issues with this upgrade at all.
Okay. And just real briefly, just kind of an overview in terms of the planning department workload. Are you seeing it increase as things warm up?
Oh, every one of us has a full plate, Leslie. So we're keeping busy over here.
Anything in particular that you think people ought to know about coming up?
I don't know of anything that's on the upcoming agenda. I mean, we always talk about that at the end of the Planning Commission. We tend to review the things that will be upcoming on the Planning Commission. But I don't have that information right in front of me, no.
Okay. Sean, thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
That's Summit County Staff Planner Sean Lewis. Again, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meeting tomorrow, starting at 6 o'clock at the Sheldon Richens Building. KPCW News Time, 8:25.
This is Randy Barton with The Local View, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. weekdays. Tune in. We feature and showcase local news from our award-winning news department, Leslie Thatcher, Rick Bruff, Lynn Ware Peak, and Renee Bodley. National news from NPR, international headlines with the BBC, Marketplace, your phone calls, public service announcements, Lost and Found, Many Voices, One Show. Brought to you by Park City Live, Sammy's Bistro, Heber Valley Tourism, Miller Orthodontics, Matt and Missy Kelly, Park City Home Team.
Hi, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage pickup provider and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. All-in-one recycling is used in Summit County. Recyclables go in your larger blue or brown bin, and gray is for garbage. Help keep Summit County clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
8:25, still to come, we'll be talking with Rick Tishman, longtime Park City second homeowner resident, currently the president of the New Park Hotel Homeowner Association Board, along with Brian Richards, director of Mountain Town Music. We'll be talking about an open house tonight. That is for the Preserve at New Park. This is a new development proposal to build 8 townhomes adjacent to the Sun Calendar Plaza and Amphitheater. Later on in the hour, we'll be talking with Paul Askins. He'll be in to talk about the Heber Valley Concerts in the Park series that began last Wednesday. First in local news, the Park City Council got a lot of public input last week on the notion of Vail Resorts' efforts to trademark the name Park City. The City Council says now that they've heard from both Vail and the public, they've got more to study before taking a stance. Lynn Peake has more on that.
Park City Council member Andy Bierman says the council is getting a crash course in trademark law. He says it's a priority and they aren't yet taking a stance, but it is front and center for the council.
Council got a ton of feedback from Vail, from the chamber, from the public, and we made a conscious decision not to make any decisions last night. We're going to look into some of the alternatives we heard. We're going to continue to educate ourselves on trademarks and continue to talk with Vail. So I think it's an ongoing conversation.
The alternatives Bierman mentions in part were suggested by members of the public, including one patent attorney who briefly discussed licensing instead of trademarking the city's name.
There were two different suggestions in the meeting last night, and one of them was that the city should trademark it and license it back to Vail, and the other was that Vail should trademark it and license it back to the city, and then the city can protect it. Really, it's too early. I'm not going to speculate on that. We need to hear from a trademark lawyer what could actually be done.
He said the council has been studying this for months, but it wasn't until last Thursday that the public conversation was truly kicked off.
We've been monitoring it since last summer, and we've been in steady conversations with Vail about it since March. And it was only in mid-May that they had narrowed their scope and received the tentative approval on this trademark. And then it became very real. It became a topic of conversations. Prior to that, I think both sides had been, both the city and Vail, had been proactive in trying to find ways to work through this. So it's not new for us, even if it's come on the public's radar in the last month.
Bierman says, like the public, the council is wary of a memorandum of understanding, or MOU, that would define the parameters of a trademark if granted.
There are some concerns how binding an MOU is, and there are multiple concerns. There are concerns specific to the trademark that we've heard, and then there's also concerns about the confusion around the name Park City.
He said it was important for the public to present their thoughts to City Council. The council also heard from Vail at the meeting and the Park City Chamber Bureau, who surprisingly hadn't yet spoken on the trademark application.
I was proud and impressed by the public that showed up. Quite a few people spoke, and they were articulate, they were constructive, they were respectful. Bill Rock and Kristen Williams showed up to talk on behalf of Vail, and I think they showed a lot of courage. They were great explaining items one by one. We also had the Chamber show up, which we've been waiting to hear the Chamber weigh in on this, and I was a little surprised by what they had to say, but they're not concerned about this. They threw they suggested some tools that they'll work with local businesses.
He says the public has spoken and the council has heard it loud and clear.
I think from the public side of things, we would all like to see them add a word to it, call themselves Park City Mountain, or something that differentiates them from the town and the community. I think this community has an attachment to our name. We don't want it to be a brand. We want it to be our name and our personalities.
The city hasn't taken a position yet. Bierman says they'll get there.
Council didn't intend to make a decision last night. We just wanted to inform ourselves on more about trademarks and the interested stakeholders and hear from the public, and we accomplished that.
That's Park City Council member Andy Bierman. I'm Lynn Ware, Peak, KPCW News.
Additional support for programming on KPCW is provided by Sammy's Bistro on Bonanza Drive, open daily, 11 a.m., sammysbistro.com. Peterson Calder Real Estate, Berkshire Hathaway, selling Park City since 1989. ExperienceParkCity.com. Sean Potter, Estate Planning in Summit and Wasatch Counties, wasatchlawgroup.com, 647-5951. Done to Your Taste Catering, 21 years perfecting life celebrations, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
8:30 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Preserve at New Park is a new development proposal to build 8 townhomes adjacent to the Sun Calendar Plaza and Amphitheater. The developers are inviting New Park neighbors, owners, residents, and businesses to learn to an open house with Summit County planning staff tonight to learn more about the current development proposal. On the phone with me, I have the president of the New Park Hotels Homeowners Association Board, Rick Tishman, and in the studio with me, Brian Richards. He's director of Mountain Town Music, both of whom are very concerned about the current application. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Okay. So the open house scheduled from 5:30 to 7 o'clock at the New Park Hotel Conference Center. Brian, can you tell me, who's hosting the meeting?
The developers are actually hosting the meeting. I'm going to let Ricky tell a little bit more about that, since he is actually part of the Homeowners Association, has a little bit more information there.
Okay. So, Rick, the planning department is going to be there to answer questions, but the Homeowners Association called it, or the developer?
Actually, it's the developer, not the master developer, the original developer. This is the developer who is planning on building the Preserve. And it's an open house tonight, and he will have, to my knowledge, I will not be there, pictures of what this proposed new building will look like. The original proposal that was put forth by the original developer called for this space to be commercial. And this developer is now coming in, since he bought it during the recession, and is trying to change it to a residential. And that is basically what the HOA is against, and also the size and the enormity of what this project is going to look like in the immediate area surrounding the amphitheater and in front of the hotel.
So the space we're talking about are basically those parking lots just to the west of the amphitheater, where a lot of parking is now held for either the Swanner or Maxwell's or some of that restaurant space. As you mentioned, Rick, it was my understanding that this parcel does have vested development rights, but the controversy is that instead of these two restaurant pads, we're talking about 4-story buildings. So, Brian, your fear is that this could ruin an otherwise sunny open amphitheater used by thousands?
Yeah, exactly. You know, speaking with Mark Wainsgard, the original vision for that center was to draw the community into it and be sort of the center of this development where you could show movies, have concerts. And by building this gigantic four-story building, you sort of eliminate the view of that center area as you're actually pulling into Maxwell's. Now when you're coming in, all you will see is this four-story building. So I think what's happening is it's actually deviating from what Jim and Mark originally had planned for the development. I think that's the major issue. You know, yes, a one-story pad where you have a restaurant and you have a patio where people can sit, it still maintains that visual appeal to the community.
Yeah. So, Rick, the hotel's concerns, I mean, you guys are kind of off on the periphery. Why are you concerned about this?
Well, we're sitting right above the retail where Maxwell's is. And this building will be four stories in height and will cause shadows across the plaza, and it just will take away from the open space of it. The HOA is not against development. We are not against him building a one-story building that was proposed and approved. We are against a four-story building that will take away from what this area has created in the Park City area. I mean, Brian can explain, this is a major gathering spot. It'll take away from the vibrancy of the whole area by putting up a four-story building. And to make note, this developer is putting out on his paperwork and the information with pictures showing what this structure is going to look like with a big word called approved across it. That's the furthest thing from the truth, Leslie. This building has not been approved at all. The only thing that has been okayed was a one-story building, not a four-story building. So he needs to stop putting that out there and making the public think that this building has already been approved to change it from commercial to retail, from commercial to residential, as well as the Planning Commission has approved it, because it has not been approved.
Yeah, you mentioned that this change in use from commercial to residential. Does that require some kind of conditional use, or do you know the process?
To my knowledge, it will have to go through the Planning Commission. There is some kind of discretionary approval. I do know that the original developers, as Brian mentioned, Jim and Mark, are against it because this is not what the master plan called for. It's going to diminish probably some values, and he has no right to come in and just change the use, the height, the mass, of what the master plan called for.
Any idea when the application does come before the Snyderville Planning Commission?
I think it's over the summer, if I'm not mistaken. I think the intent of the open house was to get the public in. There have been some preliminary meetings with the Planning Commission. I do know that I think Mark sat in on that, maybe Jim. And there was a little bit of banter from what I was told. Jim, unfortunately, is out of town and can't make it. Hopefully Mark will be around tonight, and I'll be in town next week as well. But it's going to be a little fight to go forward with this. We're just not for it. We'll work with Gary, but not for a residential property out there.
Yeah. Have either of you personally met with the applicant to talk about?
I have not met with him yet.
I have not as well. If he's listening when I'm in town next week, I'd be more than happy to sit down and talk with him.
Yeah. So, Brian, any idea in terms of the number of users we see of the amphitheater?
You know, as far as the concerts are concerned, we are getting consistent crowds of 800 to 1,000 people. And, you know, it's become a beloved series out there. And I've actually watched it grow from when it was like 10 people in front of the Basin Fieldhouse to what it is now. And I can assure you that a four-story building will impact the evening, not only from an aesthetic point of view, but from an audio point of view. You're going to have sound bouncing off of walls now, and it won't be as pleasurable of an experience with a four-story building there. And, you know, it concerns me for sure that they're deviating from the master plan. And what I feel is that there's not a lot of information out there, and it's kind of all of a sudden popping up. And, you know, we're heading into a busy summer season, and people are out riding their bikes, they're out hiking their dogs, they're not necessarily paying attention to community open houses. And I feel a lot of time what happens is, as a community, we don't understand the impact of these issues until we see them and they're already into the process, and then we can't change it. So what I assure, or, you know, I want, love all of the listeners to really pay attention to this as it moves forward. And if you're opposed to it, make your voice heard. We will have petitions at our Thursday night concerts that people can sign that we will give to the Planning Commission so that they understand that the New Park community is opposed to this process.
And I'm just guessing. I mean, the applicant is likely concerned that since this project was built around this parcel, that all of the retail along the eastern border of the project, with the exception of Best Buy, hasn't been rented out. And so it's like, why would I build any more retail? Either of you can respond to that?
Well, I can, Leslie. He's had numerous opportunities to rent the space that you're talking about that sits vacant. He has continually rejected leases by various other retail vendors wanting to come in there, holding out for higher rents and not willing to make deals. I think everyone else in town is making deals and doing long-term leases, but he was trying to self-rent and was unable to secure leases. So unfortunately, these spaces are sitting empty, but they're caused by his own actions. There's more than enough retail in the area. The restaurants speak for themselves. Maxwell's continually has a wait if you go there on the weekends. I know when I've been there, sometimes you can wait 45 minutes to an hour. And by putting this in, we'll just damage the whole area of what it stands for. This was carefully planned to have walkways, pedestrian functions for the retail and the restaurant storefronts. And by putting these big garage doors out there, we'll just not, it'll be unsightly, basically, for that matter.
Okay, again, this open house will be held 5:30 to 7 o'clock tonight at the New Park Hotel Conference Center. My understanding is that the planning staff, as well as the developer, will be there to answer questions?
I believe so.
Okay, anything else from either of you?
You know, I just encourage the community to get out there and make their voice heard because, again, we don't want to be sitting in a situation where next summer we're putting on concerts and you come to the New Park Amphitheater and you're like, whoa, where did that come from?
Okay. Rick Tishman and Brian Richards, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:41.
This is Angela from Peak Art and Frame, sponsors of Cool Science Radio on KPCW. Peak Art and Frame offers local photography and artwork, as well as digital printing, custom framework, and mirrors. Open Monday through Saturday and located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801 or peakartandframe.com.
Support for Marketplace Morning Report on KPCW comes from Esko Heating, Air, Plumbing, and Electrical. Small undetected leaks can cause household damages. We recommend your home be inspected annually. More information at EscoUtah.com, 855-ESCO-NOW. That's ESCO, Esko.
8:42 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the 19th annual AmBank Heber Valley Concerts in the Park started up last Wednesday in the studio with details about this year's lineup. Paul Askins, one of the organizers. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Leslie.
So concerts are held every Wednesday in Heber City Park?
Thursday.
Yep.
It's, we've been doing it. Oh, we tried Mondays. We tried Wednesdays. We landed on Thursdays. It works better for that valley.
Okay. So the music acts go through late August then, huh?
Yeah, we've been consistently doing the second week of June to the last week of August.
Okay.
Ends up about 12 concerts through the summer season.
Great. And are you still hosting the farmer's market there?
Yep. Farmer's market goes along with it. It starts at 4, and then the music starts at 6:30. The music goes till 8:39, and the market goes till 9 also. So there's plenty of food, plenty of drink, and music through the evening. It's a good time.
Yeah, so you can just purchase food and beverage at the farmer's market then, huh?
Right, or bring your own.
Yeah.
Yep. We get crowds out there pushing 1,000, 1,500 people nowadays. People bike in, walk in, drive in. There's plenty of parking out there. And like I say, it's a great time. It's turned into quite the social family event for the Heber Valley.
Okay. So let's see. Swagger kicked it off last week. Coming up this week, you've got the Slick Rock Gypsies. And maybe you can just kind of give us a rundown of who else is coming this summer.
Yeah, Slick Rock Gypsies coming up. They're a long time Park City or other Salt Lake based, but they've been playing in Park City for quite a while. Jeannie Redis Logan, she's coming back. Old timers here might remember Jeannie and the Hitmen. She's coming back a week from Thursday as Jeannie and the Hitmen with some of the original players, including John Flanders and Monty Morrison. I'm going to be playing with her on the 23rd, 180 North. That's a Heber City band. They'll be coming up. Kid and Nick is a show I picked up. They're coming out of L.A. Guy Chris Tedesco is a band promoter, and he got me these guys. They're coming through town, so it should be a great show. Mr. Sister, I think everybody in town knows Mr. Sister. Dan and the girls, always a great show. Slim Chance and the Psychobilly Playboys, another a rock and country band out of the Heber Valley. Motherlode, this year is the first year in probably 7 or 8 years that Motherlode wasn't the final band of the season. They had a scheduling conflict, but we still got them in. Red Desert Ramblers is a bluegrass band. Excellent music, excellent bluegrass music. John Flanders coming again, Blues on First. Good old blues band, and we're going to finish off with Chris Orrock and the Laszlos on August 25th. Chris comes up out of Salt Lake. He's an excellent musician also. So I'm looking forward to the schedule. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, so with the exception maybe the Kid and Nick show, these are repeats? I mean, you've had these guys over the years? Anything besides Kid and the Nick new?
Slim Chance is new.
Okay.
Let's see. Blues on First, actually, some of the players have been there before, but they haven't been here as Blues on First before. And, we keep this concert series pretty much to local bands, and I like to give preference to Heber Valley bands, but you know there's a few there, and then there's a whole lot up here. Finding bands is not an issue around here. There are a lot of music out there, a lot of bands, a lot of people want to play.
Right. So you've AmBank is then the overall sponsor, and then you have each show sponsors, huh, to help pay for the music.
Right. AmBank's been our sponsor for the last 6-7 years. I'm very grateful to them for stepping up and coming up with the money, and then. Each week we have a co-sponsor who either just donates to be part of the community, or they come up and they'll promo their business a little bit, hand out some swag, whatever they need. But it's turned into a pretty good system. Like you say, 19 years. So I remember, just like Brian was saying, when we first started out, it was John Flanders and about 10 or 12 people out in the middle of the park, and now we've got a whole different situation.
Okay. Again, concerts start at 6:30, and right there at Heber City Park. Do you have the schedule online or a Facebook page or
something? We do have a Facebook page, Heber Valley Concerts in the Park. It's on Facebook. And we don't have a website, but we do the Facebook. And I'll be sending out promotionals to all the local news media each week. So shouldn't be a problem finding out a schedule.
Okay. How's the traffic between here and Heber City?
It depends on when you choose to go. They're doing some road repair right outside of Park City. They're doing some road repair right outside of Heber City. If you go at the wrong time, it can be a challenge. But in the evening, they're usually all done. So people from here, if you're interested in going out over there around 5 o'clock, it's not going to be a problem because they put the trucks away. But in the day, anywhere on Highway 40 nowadays is kind of a challenge. It's construction season.
Yeah. Okay. Paul, anything else you want to mention?
No, that's it. Thanks for having me on, Leslie. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Paul Askins, KPCW News Time now, 8:47.
This is Mike Strawn, equipment buyer for Cole Sport, a local KPCW supporter. Summer is upon us, and we are stocked with cycling gear for all ages and abilities. Whether it's retail, rental, demo, or repair you're after, we've got you covered. We offer brands like Giro, Mavic, Pac, Smith & More at our Park Avenue location. Cole Sport. Expect the unexpected.
Coming up now on 848, good morning. Twin brothers who are suspected in a nationwide cell phone scheme were arrested in Heber City on Friday. Heber City police are reporting that they were contacted by AT&T that the two suspects were at a Heber City motel. It's alleged that the suspects were able to purchase iPhones at Best Buy and the Apple stores in six Utah cities and 27 stores using their own name but billing someone else's cellular account. The suspects' phones were pinged, and they were located in Heber City. Police found 27 iPhone 6S Plus cellular devices totaling nearly $23,000 in stolen property in the hotel room. 22-year-old Carlos Angelista and his twin brother, Brena, were arrested and booked into the Wasatch County Jail on one count of receiving stolen property, a second-degree felony. The brothers have been under investigation by AT&T for more than a year. Heber City police say the brothers are suspected of stealing about $150,000 worth of merchandise during that time. News time, 8:48.
This is Davey Ratchford from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. The resort is now open for summer and offers a variety of events for the whole family, including the annual 4th of July celebration, summer concert series, and weekly Wednesday Farmers Market. The full calendar of Park City Mountain events is available at parkcitymountain.com.
Vail Resorts finished the ski season strong. The company just announced its third quarter results in an investor call last week. And Rob Katz, CEO, says that earnings and season pass sales are up. KPCW's Renee Bodley has the story.
Revenue increased almost 15% for Vail Resorts in the third quarter of the 2016 fiscal year. That's compared to the same period last year. And total skier visits increased almost 14%. Chief Executive Officer Rob Katz said Park City deserved some of the credit for the company's success.
In particular, our first season operating the new Park City Resort proved to be a success, and results were in line with our ambitious expectations for what is now the largest ski resort in the U.S.
And Katz said Park City is only going to get bigger and better.
We do feel like Park City has more growth potential than a number of our other resorts because we think we're just getting going in terms of educating people about the Park City experience. We have a lot of room to continue to dial in the experience there and improve it. I think there's no doubt that this year was a very significant year. It was very transformative, but I think as we go forward, that will still be, in our mind, a resort that continues to drive above industry average and above even our own company average growth.
And company growth in the third quarter was strong. Total lift revenue was up $50 million. That's 17% compared to the same period last year. Katz also gave Park City credit for the 16% increase in dining revenue, saying those numbers were bolstered by the opening of the new Miners Camp restaurant and the upgrade of the Red Pine Lodge and Summit House. And it looks like more people will be dining on the slopes next year. Season pass sales for the 2016-2017 ski season were up almost 30% from last ski season.
The season pass results this spring represent our strongest absolute and percentage growth ever in our spring selling season and are a strong indication of the compelling value of our season pass products, our successful targeted marketing efforts, and the significant investment we make in our resorts.
Katz said pass sales were strong in Northern California, likely due to the good snowfall last winter, and the percentage growth from the Chicago area nearly doubled other markets due to the company's purchase of Wilmot Mountain. Overall, Katz says season pass sales are a good sign for investors.
However, we believe that our success in moving our guest purchase decision earlier in the year creates more opportunity for stable and consistent growth and overall results. Season passes sold for the 2016-2017 U.S. ski season through May 31st, 2016, represent approximately half of the total season passes sold for the 2015-2016 U.S. ski season.
Katz says he attributes the strong quarterly report to two things.
One, the momentum, of the product itself. We are continuing to drive brand awareness of the Epic brand itself across the industry. And we are continuing to improve the way we target and segment and communicate to our guests. And that gets more sophisticated, we're just more intelligent every year as we learn more from the previous year. And I think you're seeing the combination of all that drive significant growth.
That's Rob Katz, CEO of Vail Resorts. I'm Renee Bodley, KPCW News.
This is Kelly Miller with Assemble Park City, a proud KPCW underwriter. Assemble offers a co-working space that provides a modern collaborative space for you to do your work on the web at assembleparkcity.com.
Attorneys for a Utah death row inmate argued in a U.S. district court last week that Vaughn Lester Taylor should get a new hearing on charges that he committed a double murder and kidnapping in Weber Canyon shortly before Christmas of 1990. The Associated Press is reporting that attorneys laid out their case to U.S. District Judge Tina Campbell. More than 25 years ago, Taylor and a Confederate Edward Stephen Deli escaped from a halfway house and broke into the Summit County cabin. But the appeal attorneys say it was Deli, not Taylor, who fired the fatal shots that killed 70-year-old Beth Potts and her 49-year-old daughter, Kay Tita. The pair also shot the father, Rolf Tita, and left him for dead and kidnapped the Tita's two daughters, but were caught by officers after a vehicle chase. In 1991, Taylor pled guilty to two counts of capital murder, was sentenced to death. Deli was found guilty in a separate trial of second-degree murder and is serving a life sentence. The defendant's lawyers said that the two victims were killed by shots from a .44 Magnum, which Deli carried, not the .38 Special that Taylor carried. They also said that Taylor didn't know what was going on at his trial. But according to the Associated Press, Assistant Utah Attorney General Aaron Riley said if there's a hearing, they can put on, quote, tons of evidence of his guilt. She also said that even if he didn't fire the shots, Taylor as an accomplice is equally responsible for a crime under Utah law. Taylor has been unsuccessful in three previous appeals to the Utah Supreme Court. It's 8:54.
Wasatch Brew Pub, a KPCW sponsor of Friday's Morning Mix, will be participating in Savor the Summit, Park City's outdoor dinner party down the center of Main Street. It celebrates food, drink, and music on Saturday, June 18th. More information about Savor the Summit and the Wasatch Brew Pub at 250 Main Street is available at wasatchbeers.com.
The Colony at White Pine Canyon is a proud, longtime supporter of KPCW and its voice in the community. The Colony is a gated mountain living community offering ski-in and out estate-sized lots and located in the middle of 7,300 skiable acres of Park City Mountain Resort. Details can be found at the Colony, WPC.com or 649-3411.
As the Summit County Council last week considered an appeal from Rocky Mountain Power, one issue that came up was the health effects of being near a high-voltage transmission line. There's been a national debate about the impacts of electromagnetic frequency, or EMF. KPCW's Rick Ruff has more about that.
As we've reported, Rocky Mountain Power is appealing the vote from the East County Planning Commission, which denied a section of the power line through North Summit. Council Chairman Roger Armstrong said by happenstance the issue of EMF came up in a case he handled in his private legal practice.
I had occasion to do some research on that for a client in Los Angeles within the last year. It doesn't appear that there's any kind of settled evidence that it's harmful or not harmful. There's not. It's difficult to research and measure that. There seems to be some evidence of minor increases in childhood leukemia based on proximity to EMF, but it's not certain. It's all over the map.
The proposed upgrade would increase power in the line from 46,000 to 138,000 volts, and the poles would be 20 feet taller. Deputy County Attorney Dave Thomas said what they've heard from the power company is that the EMF impacts would be decreased in that case, not heightened.
If what they're proposing decreases what is already a pre-existing risk, it's not going to raise to that level of radiation. And I think what you have before you is at least uncontroverted testimony that, one, in terms of the amount of amps, is actually being cut. And it's the amps that cause the EMF. And while the voltage may be going up, the actual EMF field is going down.
Rocky Mountain Power spokesman Chad Ambrose said that the EMF fields are an everyday thing with electricity.
A copy machine, for example, if you're within 6 inches from a copy machine, it goes anywhere from 4 to 200 milligauss. A hair dryer, which some of us use, hair dryers range between 1 and 700 milligauss. And a can opener would range between 500 and 1500 milligauss. These are all things that we use every day. Electricity is something we use every day, and to your point, Mr. Chair, there really is not conclusive evidence as to the impacts of EMF.
However, Council Member Chris Robinson said those household appliances would not be running 24/7 in the same way a power line would be. Engineer Rohit Nayar from the power company also answered some questions, and Dave Thomas asked about the differences in EMF between the current line and the upgrade.
Of the 46, the full capacity at the 138, and considering the extra 20 feet of distance, at the level that you're measuring at the edge of the right-of-way, which one has the greater EMF field?
I would say the 46 kV would have a bigger one because of the distance, the reduced distance, because that factors into the calculation on how much distance is there between the ground and the conductor.
But Roger Armstrong asked him how would he feel if his own child were sleeping under a power line of 138,000 volts.
Based on the numbers that I see and I have researched, the magnetic field levels are really low. And I don't see any significant risk based on all the research that has been put together by Department of Energy and all the investigation agencies out there. So I don't see any risk.
Engineer Rohit Nayar, the county council, took the arguments this week under advisement. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jans Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and the Promontory Foundation.